And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Our second hour, Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. Across the country and around the world, people have been tuned to Ferguson, Missouri. 11 days ago, an unarmed African-American teenager, Michael Brown, was shot to death by police. Since then, reporters in Ferguson have found themselves blocked by police. A Washington Post reporter and a Huffington Post reporter were detained for trespassing at a McDonald's. A New York Daily News photographer was handcuffed. Tear gas and rubber bullets were fired at an Al Jazeera America camera crew. During this hour of Midday on Media, which happens on the third Wednesday of every month, we'll look at how the media has covered events in Ferguson and how they've been shut out by police. Joining me again, my colleague from Calvin Street at the Baltimore Sun is the media critic of the Sun and Zeon TV blogger David Zerwig. David, nice to have you back here.
It's good to be back, Dan.
And certainly a lot has happened since August 9th and the shooting of Michael Brown. Another whole week of demonstrations, more demonstrations into this week, and more confrontations between police and reporters.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what, this is alarming to see this level of police really pushing the press. It's not just the what they're doing, it's the attitude towards the press that the police are showing. I found it outrageous, and there are at least, you named many of them in your introduction there, but this shooting tear gas and rubber bullets at Al Jazeera America reporters just as they were starting to broadcast live. They had the lights set up. They were not in the action. They were off to the side. And you can literally see the tear gas go in there, and then you see the bullets. Yesterday we had a case where another Al Jazeera reporter, a police officer, is caught on audio tape saying, "We will shoot you." Now, I think he meant with the rubber bullets and the tear gas. But if you don't move, we're shooting. It happened to a reporter outside of Al Jazeera as well who caught it on audio. This is outrageous. I mean, this is outrageous. And I'll tell you what really alarms me about this. I think it's going on not... Ferguson is really egregious. And the network cameras and the still photographers from the news organizations have shown us several really troubling developments. For example, the militarization of our police. This didn't happen overnight. Why are we seeing, understanding it so clearly now that something's out of control in terms of that? But, you know, if you look back, even in Baltimore, the last 6-8 months, we had that case in Towson with the Baltimore County policeman who took the came at the student photographer from UMBC, told him, "You don't have First Amendment rights." Luckily, the young man caught it on tape, and we were able to see it. By the way, I wonder what happened to that police officer. I'm going to call up Baltimore County and check on that. I'll bet he's back on the force. I'll bet no stringent action was taken against him. We had a case not too long ago at the Sun, the darkroom. Bob Hamilton wrote a really excellent piece about it, and then included a great collection of photographs.
This is the incident that happened on Guilford Avenue,
right outside
under the Jones Falls
exactly.
Expressway?
Yeah, where a Sun videographer was pushed along.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, Dan, you know, I teach journalism over at Goucher. I teach those kids respect for the police. I don't know why the police don't teach police cadets respect for the press. Mm-hmm. There is this thing called the First Amendment. To think somebody with a gun can say you don't have First Amendment rights in this country is so alarming. I mean, it's outrageous. And then you get blah, blah, blah from the spokesman for the Baltimore County Police about, well, we're investigating.
Well, in the case of the Washington Post reporter, Wes Lowry,
yeah,
he was arrested along with the Huffington Post reporter, Ryan Riley, for trespassing at this McDonald's.
Yes.
They were using Wi-Fi there. It was a location that the press was using. So Lowry filmed the arrest on his cell phone.
Yes.
And at some point here, we're going to listen to it. Some of it's hard to make out.
Yes.
But, you know, this police officer was actually waving a gun at him.
Yes.
At some point here. Here's the Lowry clip.
Your stuff, let's go.
I'm working on it.
Stop videotaping, let's grab our stuff and go.
First Amendment right to videotape you, sir.
Hurry up, let's go.
Please don't leave your gun on me.
Let's go.
You see me working on it. Please do not tell me not to use my first
time to go.
Right,
let's go.
Please not leave a gun on me.
We're down about 45 seconds, let's go.
Timer.
So, you know, waving a gun at a police, at a reporter.
Yeah, in a McDonald's.
Wait a minute. So what seems what's happened here is the police do not discriminate between the protesters that they're trying to hold at bay, or whatever they're trying to do with the protesters, and the reporters who are there to cover the story.
Well, Dan,
right? They're treating them all the same, basically.
That's a key and really clear and important point. Yes, thank you. But you know what I also believe? When you see the pictures and the videotape out of Ferguson, the police there should not be waving their guns at the protesters the way they are. I mean, they're always sticking guns in people's faces. Listen, you are in an organized, orderly protest. Police should not be pointing weapons at you in America. I don't care what the heck their explanation is. And they don't have one. They haven't had one for 9 days now why those guns are always in people's face when they're protesting. It's outrageous. But you're right. They're doing the same thing to the press. And they think once they point that rifle, they're in control. And it really, it's really a frightening message. Now that
I think the messages, the images that have come out of Ferguson are frightening.
They are. Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you something. In that McDonald's arrest, and there was also a Huffington Post reporter detained in that same time, there was absolutely no excuse for what happened to them, for them being the put in wire wrist restraints. Well, handcuffs, let's call them what they are, wire wrist restraints. You know, they take control away from you when they put those things around their wrist. They're trying to dominate you, to make you submissive to them, and it's outrageous.
Here's CNN's Jake Tapper. He was reporting from Ferguson. This was a couple nights ago, Monday night. He criticized the police reaction to the protest, the overreaction. He compared it to a scene in Afghanistan.
Yeah, bagram.
Now, I want you to look at what is going on in Ferguson, Missouri, in downtown America, okay? These are armed police with with semi-automatic rifles, with batons, with shields, many of them dressed for combat. Now, why they're doing this, I don't know. Because there is no threat going on here, none, that merits this. There is none, okay? Absolutely, there have been looters. Absolutely, over the last 9 days, there's been violence. But there is nothing going on this street right now that merits this scene out of Bagram. Nothing.
Your comments are welcome here on Midday as well, 410-662-8780. We haven't had a chance to talk about events out of Ferguson, Missouri, these last 10 days, 11 days, especially this past week of protests and the news coverage of Ferguson. David Zurawiec, the Sun's media critic, is with us in this hour of the show. Feel free to call in and join our conversation. Again, 410-662-8780. Toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. It is not unusual for the press to have confrontations with police. I have myself over the years in trying to cover a story, get closer to a story, but I don't remember being sort of treated the same as the people in the story, a protest or a demonstration or whatever was happening at the scene. In other words, the police understood we were reporters trying to get close. And I don't remember ever being pushed or roughed up, or at least in Baltimore. You know, that's my experience. But things may have changed. Things may have changed since I was on the street doing that.
Yeah, you know, well, that's a good question. I remember being covering, when I covered the Mariel boat lift, I was in army camps, and there were protests and disruptions. But that was Department of Defense. In this case, it was Army. And they would push us around and order us. But we were behind barbed wire, on a military base. They could do whatever they want. We were at their mercy.
Yeah.
You expect better on the streets of America. And that's really when Jake Tapper said, this is downtown America, which I thought was a really revealing line. I like Tapper. Out of all those show hosts, I think he's one of the most even-handed, most responsible reporters. I'm not sure yet about him going off the way he did there, but I understand why he did it faced with what reporters are
faced with. He's obviously not being
a
straight reporter. He's giving his own commentary there. But I wonder if the police in Ferguson think there's not a lot of sympathy for the press. that we can get away with this here.
I think that's part of it.
The public doesn't really care whether how we treat the press here.
Dan, part of that is us. We have not done a good job of making our case, and we have not done a good job of fighting back when people try to push back on our rights. Some of it's ideological. You know, when James Rosen, the reporter from Fox, when the Justice Department named him a co-conspirator, essentially said it's a criminal to try to get information. A lot of people didn't say anything. They didn't say anything because he was from Fox. Oh, we don't care. Let him go down, you know? James Risen from the New York Times, mm-hmm. what he's going
facing
through.
Facing going to jail.
Yes, faced with going to jail. You know, and Maureen Dowd wrote about it this Sunday, thank God somebody. But there's not a sense of urgency among the press that says you will not do this to the Justice Department. They're getting away with it.
Well, I think we try to make the case. I'm not sure how sympathetic the public is anymore.
Well, I don't know.
I'd like to hear from it. Well, in this case, you have a racially charged shooting and a reaction to it, the aftermath and protests that have gone on all week. People are shocked at the images coming out of Ferguson, Missouri. A lot of people just see it as police overreaction. This militarization of the police has become very vivid to us because of this experience. And the police in Ferguson, this is a very tense situation. They're very concerned about public image.
Yep.
Maybe they're not concerned about public image. They don't seem to care about this. If they will treat the press this way, people with access to television cameras and the printed word, how do they treat average people?
Well,
that's
what viewers and readers should be alarmed by when they see this. I think part of it, you're right about sympathy for the press. I think part of it we've done to ourselves. You know, I think part of it we've really had. In our industry, Dan, if you're serious about what you do and you think about yourself as someone who's serving democracy in a higher purpose, it's almost laughable now to some people in the business. Yeah, it's old school, let's out, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're all in for ourselves. Let's get our brand established. You know, make sure you establish your brand, jump from one place to the next. Who cares? The sense of public service in journalism, in some places, has been diminished. We've done that to ourselves, no doubt about it. So why should we expect the public to care about us? I get that.
We'd like to hear from our listeners as well during this hour of the show. 410-662-8780. This is Midday on Media. Dan Roderick's here with David Zurowick. A short break. We'll be right back. Here's the New York Daily News staff photographer Pearl Gabel, G-A-B-E-L, describing what happened to her in Ferguson, Missouri, when she was approached by a police officer who pointed a rifle at her face, she says.
God.
This was on Monday or Sunday? Sunday. She said, get on the ground, put it on the ground. He then ordered, seeing I was holding one camera and had another slung over my shoulder. So, okay, she's carrying two cameras. The gun was still trained on me. Put your hands behind your head, he said. You're under arrest for curfew violation. Now, this was at 1 a.m., I guess, into Monday. She acknowledges that this was at 1 a.m., 1 hour after the curfew that Missouri's governor had ordered when he called a state of emergency there. Most of the night's protesters had left, dispersed by smoke bombs and tear gas and teeming rain. What are these? The cop asked me. My cameras, she replied. He took my equipment and my cell phone as tear gas swirled around me, rain poured down, and two other people were similarly detained. I have a press pass, I said. Look under my poncho. When the cop was satisfied I was a newspaper photographer doing my job, he gave me back my belongings. Who do you work for? I said, the New York Daily News. Welcome to St. Louis, he said, and then let me go. I mean, what is that? I mean, the police obviously don't want. I don't understand this.
I don't.
They don't want the press showing what they're doing, but they're all decked out in all this combat gear, training rifles on people.
That's right. A woman with two cameras, holding a camera and a bag of cameras, laying on the ground with her hands. He can't just ask her, put the cameras down, keep your hands up. Let me see your press credentials. How hard is that?
They're just trying to do their job. The journalists are just trying to do their jobs in covering a story. Let's take a call from Thomas. Thomas, you're on Midday. Welcome to the show.
Hello, yes. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted it to maybe be commented on. Certainly, I think it's important that we pay attention to what seems to be the militarization of police departments, even small-town police departments, but maybe to the point of, you know, general respect to the press, I'd like to hear the guest speak to last evening CNN reported and showed video of two CNBC reporters being pelted by rocks by what appeared to be just a group of people. It's unclear whether they're demonstrators or just people behind them, but in Ferguson, these were not police people. They appeared to be civilians pelting these two reporters by rocks. So that goes beyond it just being a question of police brutality to also being a question of general order. I know your guest said this is a perfectly orderly area, no, you know, but there, you know, that's another instance of violence, not by the police, on reporters. And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who was throwing those rocks, so it's really hard to comment on what it is. I mean, you know, honestly,
it's part of the general anarchy there. Just without throw rocks at whoever you feel like at the moment. I don't know.
You know, and that's a dangerous thing. If you comment without facts about stuff, you can't. I mean, this is part of what's wrong with talking heads on media. They comment without facts. I have to just say, you know, respectfully and nicely, Thomas, I don't know who is throwing those rocks, so I can't tell you. I mean, I can't offer any kind of analysis of it. Is it chaotic sometimes in a street scene like that? Absolutely, it's chaotic in a street scene like that. If your suggestion is that the police have to behave that way towards the press to restore order, I would disagree with you. There's a way to stage the press in certain areas and say, here's where you can work from. You can't work over here.
They don't seem to care too much about treating the press with scorn.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Do we have another Thomas? Thomas number two calling on Midday. Hi, Thomas.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I'd just like to comment on Jake Tapper's commentary when he was on the ground there in Ferguson, and he stated that there was no violence now, but yes, there had been looting, and yes, there had been violence, but there's none now, so why the heavy militarized police presence? And I would point out that maybe the reason there's no violence now is precisely because of that presence.
Yeah.
And I'll take your comments.
Well, before you go, I mean, yeah. I thought the same thing when I heard him say that. In the moment, there may be no need for them, but who knows about the next hour or that what happened in previous hours.
Right.
But I'm curious, what do you think of the police reaction to people who are demonstrating angrily about the shooting of Michael Brown? What do you think of the police behavior here?
Well, what do I think about their...
Yeah, because it's all been on television for a week.
Reaction to the protesting... I mean, they have the right to protest, of course, peaceably. But, you know, we know there's been a lot more than peaceful protest going on. So,
Well, let me ask you this. If you found out that the Lois Lerner IRS thing went a lot further than it did and that the IRS totally, totally targeted conservative groups and you wanted to protest against the IRS... and you went down to the federal building and wanted to march in front of the federal building with a sign, you and others, saying, this is not what the IRS is supposed to be. This is a crooked, politicalized operation. And while you tried to do that, a policeman in riot gear stood 10 feet away from you, pointing a rifle at your face. You think that would be a good feeling?
Hmm.
No, I don't. But I think if I were throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails, that is about precisely what I...
Well, which came first? Do we know which came first? We need a federal investigation to determine which came first there when it comes to that.
Yeah, and the pictures we're seeing, and I have to be honest, I'm not on Tapper's side. I mean, that's a complicated movie made. I don't think a reporter should be doing that, but he's in a position where he's a show host too, so it gets complicated. But the point he made in that was he said there was an area two blocks away where there were problems. But the police that he pointed to were about a half a block away from him and a small group of protesters who were walking as police told them to do, to keep moving. You can't protest in Ferguson by standing there with a sign. You have to keep walking. And I heard the police chief explain it on TV yesterday that we think if we keep them moving, the protest will be over sooner. They'll walk it off. So Tapper was pointing at those police who were massed on the street, pointing guns at him and the people who were doing what police were telling them to do. Not people throwing Molotov cocktails and not people throwing rocks. That's what he was trying to say. And we have seen that over and over for the last 9 days, and it's disturbing. And God bless journalism for showing that to the rest of America.
I think the case you described, the Al Jazeera America case, that crew, easily identifiable as a television working crew, just like this photographer for the New York Daily News.
Yeah.
Maybe her press pass is under her press ID card is under her poncho, but she's carrying cameras, right? But in the case of the Al Jazeera America working TV crew, you fire tear gas canisters landing right next to them, right? You said rubber bullets. I saw some of this video.
They were in a staged area.
Yeah, sorry, still photographed. Well, that's meant to have a chilling effect. That means don't come back. Don't come back again. It's meant to have a chilling effect on the people trying to do this.
And
their job of covering this story.
Dan, and if you go to the Al Jazeera website, you will see another event that took place the day before yesterday, Monday, where an Al Jazeera reporter, a policeman comes up to him and tells him to shut it down. And it's really rude, and it's aggressive.
Yeah.
And the Al Jazeera reporter says to the camera person, "Are you filming this?" as the policeman grabs his wrist. And the policeman says, using a lot of profanity, "I don't care. I'll confiscate the video. He can film all he wants."
Well, that's what I mean. They don't care. They're dealing with the press with scorn. They apparently must be aware that some of this is going to get captured and reported to the rest of the country and the world. They don't seem to care too much in Ferguson about how this comes, how they come across.
Honestly,
starting with all the military garb and the rifles and all of that, it does shed a light. This whole episode is shedding a light on a couple of things. One is the treatment of young black men who are approached by police in this country, which happens every day, someplace, and what it can lead to, but also the militarization of police departments. They have all this equipment now that's come to them since the days of 9/11, mainly.
Dan, you know,
and they use it. They want to use it. I mean, when you use it, you incite people.
Dan, the first day into this, the first night into this, I should say, I looked at it and I thought, that looks like Intifada in the Middle East. That's exactly what it looks like. It is, there's no difference. And I've heard commentator after commentator, without thinking it through, saying, "Oh my God, this looks like a third world country. This doesn't look like America. What's going on here?" This is an alarming development.
Let's take another call, David. This is Brian. You're on Midday Next. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just making a comment. I mean, I think a lot of this, and I think the way the police feel, and I agree, a lot of them go way overboard, and you can see that. But also, I think the impression they're getting that the media is inciting the people that do collect there, that starts off as a peaceful protest. Everybody agreed, has that right, and they should, because it's what needs to be done to change things. But when you have such an influx of media, And it just raises everybody's tension, and it just goes crazy from there because it turns into mayhem. That's the way I feel about it.
Brian, I understand your point of view, and I say this in respectfully too, because maybe I'm so of the culture of the media, I'm so socialized to this, that I can't see it from outside of my perspective. So let me try to share my perspective with you. I don't understand how the media incites or inflames an event by covering it. And if you don't have the media there to cover it, I'm sure you know what happens in darkness, the bad things that people in power do to other people when they don't have a camera or a reporter there to record what they're doing and to protect people's rights. You know, I hope we hear by the time the hour's over from some folks in the city of Baltimore, you know, some folks who feel like they're sometimes on the wrong end of police aggression, because I think if people who are in that position saw a press representative there, they might feel better that someone is there to record it if some abuse is inflicted
upon
them.
On the other hand, there are people who will perform for the camera, and performing can include throwing a brick or a rock or something.
I guess you're right. I guess that would be the answer to Brian's thing about how they inflame or incite, well, how the presence of the media inflames
it. It seems like human nature to perform. I mean, TV cameras have been around recording scenes, live scenes of people protesting and demonstrating for quite a while now, for decades.
You know,
people are pretty savvy to all this.
I have to you know.
And then there's all the little cell phones that people
have.
Whoa, there's the cameras, right?
There's a great issue. The technology.
I mean, actually,
of this.
Everybody's a reporter in some way these days, if they want to be. Right?
And that, in a way, that's a good thing. You know, we've had a video from there. Remember the video, the security camera from the convenience store that showed Michael Brown's encounter with the guy?
Yeah.
And then we had a young woman, a 19-year-old woman, who had just moved out of her parents' house and into Ferguson to start a job. And she had the smartphone video of right after the shooting on the street, which has been shown everywhere. She was on CNN Monday morning. They brought her to New York. Now, maybe that's excessive. I thought, why did they bring her to New York and put her on TV and blah, blah, blah. But the technology of it, you're absolutely right. The technology of it is really making a huge difference.
Let's take another call. Nicholas, you're on Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, a couple of things really quick. I'm just a regular 35-year-old guy. I have three kids, and I've never been in any sort of trouble before. And I'm white, and I've been hassled by the police more than I can tell you just for driving what I believe a fancy car. I believe in Baltimore County, if you have a BMW or something like that, and it's something flashy looking, or maybe if you have tinted windows, you better watch out, because every time I leave the house, I'm gripping my steering wheel every time I see a police officer. And I've been harassed in a Panera Bread before and on the side of the road. I mean, I could go on all day long.
Because you drive a Beamer?
I do. I think it's because it's a younger police force. I'm only 35, but when I was a kid, I think of policemen as being men, like older, mature men. Nowadays, if you look at a lot of the officers, they look like little boys, and they're just on Facebook, and I think that they get all these toys. I think they're guys that grew up loving toys, and to them, a gun or an AR-15 is a toy, and they are looking forward to any opportunity to get their hands on it and point it at someone.
I just got to ask you this. So you leave your house, you're in your car. Actually, describe to me an incident.
Okay, you were
pulled over for speeding?
100% straight. I was on my way to take my son to school at St. Ursula's, at a private school in Baltimore County.
Uh-huh.
I pulled out of my driveway a $50,000 BMW with really fancy wheels on it, and immediately an officer did this ridiculous maneuver, spun his car around and pulled me over and just gave me the third degree. And I said, sir, what's going on? Like, why are you doing this? And he was really mean and held me there all this time. And it was bizarre. And it was because my front license plate wasn't affixed to the front of my car. It was in the front windshield, and it wasn't supposed to be there.
Okay.
I mean, that's just one example. But, Dan,
when you say, was he nasty to you?
Oh, my goodness, Dan. And you could have 100 guys that live in Baltimore County that are young call you, and they're petrified of the police. Every guy I went to high school with, friends of mine, it's no secret. And we're white guys, so it's a police issue. It's not a black-white issue. I wish the other night I was watching TV, and I just wished that I could go to Ferguson and stand there and say, guys,
It's not a black-white or white thing. I think that's what you're going to say before you get cut off.
Broke
there.
Up. Yeah, he's sorry. You're breaking up.
All right. Thank you, Nicholas. Anyone else wants to join in with that? Please give us a ring, 410-662-8669. 8780. Dan Roderick's here with David Zerwick, my colleague from the Baltimore Sun, media critic of the Baltimore Sun, and the Zeon TV blogger. I've been listening to two sides of the story on satellite radio, says Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
On the channel called Progress, which is left-leaning, the narrative mainly seems to be that the young teenager, Michael Brown, was murdered by the police, and that charges should be brought on the officer, and also that the protesters are fully justified in their protests because of their life of oppression. On Patriot Radio, where we find the likes of Sean Hannity, the narrative seems to be that the young teenager was a thug who pretty much got what he deserved, and that the protesters are all animals being influenced by the media and outside agitators like Reverend Jackson. I worry that finding balanced news is becoming more and more difficult. Patriot listeners are pretty much going to align themselves with what they hear on Patriot Radio and vice versa. I can confirm this with comments from several friends who are involved with law enforcement who feel that Michael Brown had it coming. So this is very interesting. This is from satellite radio, right? Bradley,
yeah.
Thanks for that report. But that's kind of where we are in this country, aren't we? I mean, people will go to the voices that make them most comfortable with what they want to believe about any situation.
And
right?
I'll tell you, it's a profound email statement there from Bradley.
Bradley.
Because that's also why people don't trust the press and don't have any sympathy for the press, don't see the press anymore as their representative in terms of this because of the right and the left.
I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
This is important to me. So when we talk about that iron core of reporting, right? That's the phrase used by this fellow at Harvard who's described the center of the news universe,
right?
Is it like people don't actually believe in the core anymore because of all the noise around it? Because they turn on the TV and they see, you know, Chris Matthews with his point of view or Al Sharpton, and they go over here and they hear Hannity, they hear Bill O'Reilly, but they don't actually pay attention to that boring core of that's trying to present objective news and the facts.
It's absolutely
it's
true.
All drowned out by the talking heads.
And part of that is that core has been diminished as the industry's been downsized because that's what a lot of people, you know.
And that's the most expensive part of journalism, actually.
And, you know,
that's
and,
the hard sweat of journalism that costs money to produce.
Yeah. And people might want to think, oh, you know, Zerwick here is an endless promoter of The Sun. But The Sun is one of the few papers in this country that says we're going to cover the State House, we're going to cover City Hall. You look at TV stations, my God, some of them don't even cover City Hall, for God's sakes. Mm. And that's the tendency in the media, is to get rid of that iron core of the people who reported that. And that's government proceedings. That's court proceedings.
Yeah.
That's all the stuff that makes up the daily functioning of a democracy. Mm-hmm. And you know what?
It's hard police reporting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. Everybody,
street reporting.
Yeah, and everybody who's canceled the circulation, canceled the subscription to a paper, you're getting what you deserve now. You're getting Fox News and you're getting MSNBC, folks. Good luck. You know, good luck if that's where you're getting your information from.
It's Alex Jones at Harvard.
Alex Jones,
He wrote a book on the Iron Core. 410-662-8780. Folks, we need to take a short break. We'll come back and take in some more phone calls. I have some more emails to read. The email address, midday@wypr.org. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here with David Zerwick of The Sun. Comment on email from Kevin. He said, I saw an interesting article in the Daily Beast entitled, Why Isn't the NRA Defending Ferguson's Blacks? It points out that the NRA has spoken out about the mistrust of the government and the threat to freedom of these heavily armed agencies, yet has been silent during the Ferguson issues. Why aren't they outraged by the overstepping of the government in this case? Roger says, how could a citizen push back against these overly aggressive police? I am left with no more ideas. Once I had taken pictures of a police arrest from what I thought was a safe distance, one of the officers grabbed my arm and broke my camera before putting me in handcuffs. My camera didn't deter the police from charging at a bystander. What actions can be taken to stop the police from this type of behavior, this type of tyranny?
That's it. It's training is the answer, but you got to do that through the government. I mean, you have to, for Baltimore City, You got to put the pressure on the mayor's office and say, hey, are the police under control or not?
Let's take some more calls. Lauren, is Lauren still with us? Lauren's gone. How about Laura?
So we went from
Laura. Laura, thank you for calling. Go right ahead. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the widespread disrespect for the press. It goes way beyond the police. Of course, they're of the most concern because they're the ones holding the guns. But I think it extends up to the highest levels of government. David has written about President Obama's interactions with Fox TV. And you can think what you want about Fox being actual press, but nevertheless, they represent that. And more specifically, I want to talk about Governor Ehrlich when he banned the Sun paper from the State House for a period of time, to the point that the Sun brought a lawsuit. Unfortunately, they didn't prevail, but I felt as a citizen that my rights were deprived because that's where I got my news from at that time, the written paper. And I think the Sun managed to still get the news out, but and maybe it was mostly symbolic, but nevertheless, banning the, you know, head of the Maryland department and the newspaper from the press office at the State House, I thought, was just using the governor's office in a bullying way.
I think that, so. I couldn't.
Yeah, that was
more.
The David Nitkin episode when David Nitkin was covering the Laura, Ehrlich administration. That's Laura. Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt, Laura. Have you still got more you want to say? I don't want to.
Well,
I agree with you 100%.
Okay. So. No, that's pretty. That's pretty much what I said. And I think, you know, if the governor and the president are acting this way, then I don't think it's, you know, it should be surprising that, you know, they are, that other people and offices and institutions and the public also seem to have little regard for the freedom of the press.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, you know, we're not looking, this is not a popularity contest. We're not looking for people to like us necessarily.
Yeah.
One of the big failings, I think, in TV is that they want everybody to like you. We're your friends.
We're
your on your side.
Yeah,
we're
on
all
team,
this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know, we got a job to do, and not everybody's going to like what we do.
Right.
That's all there is to it, especially the people we're covering, especially in government.
Yeah.
But she's right. The David Nitkin, Michael Olesker episode during the Ehrlich administration was basically said, we're not going to give you quotes. We're not going to give you access. We're not going to give you you won't be able to attend press briefings or stuff like that. You know,
Laura,
it's ridiculous.
Amen.
You don't have to like them, but you got to let them do the jobs, right?
Amen, amen, amen. Thank you so much for this deeper analysis. It does. The police are just the ostensible sort of functioning arm of the government in terms of protection or the oppression, if that's what some folks would say. But it does go deeper. You know, thank you so much for understanding what I was trying to say about Fox News. Yes, I couldn't agree more. Whatever you think of Fox News as a news organization, and many people don't think it is, back in 2009, right after President Obama's election, I said, this is the canary in the coal mine. If he's going to treat Fox News this way, think he can declare them. The executive branch of government say some member of the press is not real press, therefore we won't let them into the White House to cover, we won't let them in on briefing. That's trouble for all of us. And I'll tell you, that's why I like Tapper. Tapper was at ABC News at the time, and when I was getting my head handed to me by Washington journalists saying I was some kind of right-wing nut because I was defending Fox and refused to understand the larger sort of ACLU-like principle, Tapper jumped in there and said, no, I cover the White House for ABC, and this is wrong. You can't treat Fox this way. And then everybody at the White House said it, and the Obama administration backed off. Now you see it with James Risen. This is outrageous what they're doing him. Thank you so much, because it does send a message. And, it you know, I wrote in 2009 that Obama had the most oppressive, most hostile attitude towards the press since any administration I've seen since Richard Nixon, and people said, you're crazy. That's where it came from. As for Ehrlich, that was so outrageous that he thought this little tin horn governor here who snuck in somehow thinks he's going to shut down the Baltimore Sun, which was the major conduit of information about state government and the people. He's going to tell them they can't come in. Think, you know, that's one of the times I fell in love with the Sun.
He might have thought that was a popular thing to do.
Oh, sure, with his four friends from the right.
For the conservative part of Maryland like that, and they always refer to the Sun as a left-wing liberal newspaper.
And that's one of the times when I fell in lifelong love with the Sun as an employee, that they spent the money to go to court. A lot of papers wouldn't have.
You know, people have strong opinions about those who have opinions, right? So, columnists, critics.
I don't know. I'm kind of mild.
The talking
in my
heads.
Opinions.
I can understand. Listen, I get a fair amount of it at the Baltimore Sun myself too. You've seen. I've shared some of my emails with you, right? So you kind of expect that when you're in the opinion business, when you're on the editorial page or a critic, right? So people have those. But then there's this iron core. There are these people who just do the job of reporting. And are out there and in some very dangerous places.
Yes.
And we have the story today of James Foley.
Totally.
I can barely talk about this story because it's so sinister, so outrageous. It's so dark. Photojournalist James Foley, who was kidnapped a couple years ago, 2012. And, you know, what's happened to him, I mean, just kind of demonstrates that you never heard of James Foley before, most people that in the last couple of days.
Dan,
he was out there taking pictures in this very, probably the most dangerous assignment in the world at the time.
Yes, and I'll tell you something. I write with extra care about the international correspondents who cover these stories. They, you know, I know some of them. I've talked to them. They live in another realm. They don't go home at 6 o'clock to the kids' Little League game and sit there in the park. You know, they're laying in a bed in Gaza with sandbags around a hotel, hoping they don't get blown up that night, sleeping on the floor, you know, trying to bring citizens, the reporters who work for news organizations in this country, trying to bring them information about the world. And you know what? We have guys like Joe Scarborough sitting in a studio at MSNBC saying, well, you know, when police tell reporters to move, they should move because you're a moron. You know that, Mr. Scarborough, because you're an idiot. Mm. People, and that's the screwed
up. He's probably never ever covered a story.
Of course not. That's the screwed up values we have. He's a guy making $1 million a year, and that reporter
sitting
out
in a
there,
studio.
You know, I wrote about the Gaza reporters. Not one of them makes as much money as Hillary Clinton did for NBC News. And those reporters, Chelsea Clinton. Yeah, Hillary Clinton for NBC. Yeah, but those reporters risked their lives for a month to tell us that story.
Is Lynn still with us? Can we take Lynn's call next? Thank you for holding, Lynn. Go right ahead, please. Hello? Lynn? Okay, I'm sorry. Lynn's not there. How about Joel or Harry? Joel or Harry? Harry, good. I'm sorry. Sorry, but we have a computer problem here. But
I'm Harry.
There's Harry. Go right ahead, Harry, with your comments. Thanks for holding. Yeah.
I guess the last couple of weeks they've been talking about how police all over the country is becoming militarized. And well, I guess 40-odd years ago I was in the service. And the one thing they taught us, and they beat it into our heads, that you don't point your weapon at somebody unless you intend to shoot them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if there's crowd control, you carried your weapon at port arms, which is basically the barrel pointing up in the air, basically.
Right.
And one of the – they're not getting enough training. But something was said in the interim that just sort of got my blood boiling, basically, about how you all are a bunch of provocateurs, basically. And I think back 50 years ago, and none of us would have known about Bull Connor and what was going on down there if somebody hadn't had the guts to stand side by side with those people down there and show what was actually happening.
Thank God you said that. Thank you so much for reminding us of the civil rights reporting and how it changed America. Thank you so much for that.
I had an email I wanted to read. Al Jazeera on the Al Jazeera America crew that was tear gassed and rubber bullets sent their way. Was Al Jazeera singled out because of who they are? Did the police know that they were Al Jazeera reporters? This is a question from Marcia in Windsor Mill.
That's a good point, Marcia. Marcia, I have a blog post up on this over at Zeon TV on BaltimoreSun.com where I talk about this. I think Al Jazeera's style of reporting, which was in the Middle East, you saw it in Arab Spring in Egypt in 2011. They report from the point of view of the protesters often, actually in the ground. I think that's one of the reasons we see the police as so militarized, because American networks have now adopted that and are starting to show it the same way. Look, I have no proof of that. But, you know, in Gaza, they shot into the Al Jazeera studios there. Literally shot into Al Jazeera studios. Here, I think it was an imitation of the same thing. I have no proof of it. But when you see the videotape, you see that they're clearly off to the side broadcasting. And the minute their lights go on, a tear gas canister comes in.
Is Lynn still with us? I'm sorry. Janet, okay, I'm sorry. We had a computer problem here, so I can't read the names of who's waiting to speak with us. Go right ahead, Janet.
I'm Janet in Pikesville. I think it was wrong of the Ferguson police to release that store video of a person who they said was Michael Brown with the, doing the strong-arm robbery. I think it was wrong of them. Even if he did, if Michael Brown did strong-arm rob, it was wrong of the police to release that without releasing the details of the shooting of Michael Brown by the cop, by Darren Wilson. However, if you look at that video, it's not obvious that it was a robbery or even a shoplifting. It may have been a misunderstanding. Suppose he, you know, had a $10 bill at that window and the clerk said, "I'm sorry, sir, you have to pay at this window." And he said, "You know, the hell with it," and threw the 10 and took. Why would he, if he shoplifted the cigars, why would he just walk out of the store carrying them in his hand?
Excuse me, we're short of time, Janet, but weren't the police, Janet, didn't the police have a Freedom of Information Act
order on that? They said they had several.
They were asked for the video.
Yeah, several of them.
So the suggestion that they released it in order to suggest that, you know, what it looks like, you know, Michael Brown deserved it or something
The one thing I'll say is they said they had a lot of Freedom of Information requests.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it, and yet no news organization said we entered a Freedom of Information. They didn't offer any confirmation.
I wondered about that. I meant to follow up on that.
Yeah.
So who actually, we don't know who actually asked
for
that?
Nobody said, "Oh, yeah, we did it." And I would, if I was the police, I would have said, I would have named the stations or the channels or the news organizations that asked for it. And they didn't.
David, thanks for being here.
Yes.
Tough thing to talk about.
It is.
But we will continue to talk about this. We'll talk about Ferguson another day, I think. But thank you very much for being here, and thank you to everyone who contributed comments to this show. David Zerwick writes the Zeon TV blog at the Baltimore Sun. He's a media critic of the Baltimore Sun and joins us on the third Wednesday of every month for Midday on Media. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Dan. I enjoyed it.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's our show for today. Hope you enjoyed the program. We'll come back again in 22 hours for another edition of Midday. In the meantime, have a great afternoon.